Good morning. We're happy to be here with you today. This, we have been back here for about a month, and kind of one of the things we're doing is we're going around to a lot of different churches. But this church is special to us, and it was somewhere we were really looking forward to for a couple of reasons. I could say three reasons. The first is that I have a lot of family in this church, and it seems like they heard that I was going to be here today and decided not to be here with us this morning. Yeah, so we can cross that one off the list for today. The second reason is I don't think I've ever been to a church where you see this many instruments and you hear this many instruments during worship. And so I always look forward to the worship here, and I never know what I'm going to see up on the stage there. Dasha's asking me, what's that instrument called? And I said, I asked that last time I was here, and I still don't remember what that was that you were playing. Okay, dulcimer. I'm sure next time I come back, I'll ask you that again. But the third thing, and I hope it's okay if I tell you this, but there are going to be bigger churches that we speak at. There are going to be all kinds of different churches we speak at, but there is not a church anywhere in the world that out of their budget supports us more than this church. And we are so thankful for that. And so we wanted to share with you a little bit together about what God has done through what you've given. And in our plans for the future. And then after that, unfortunately, you're not going to get to look at her the whole service. It'll just be me for a little while with a message. But we really did want to say thank you so much for your hearts for us. You have been such an encouragement to us. There, people from this church have gone above and beyond even what's given out of your budget, and they've supported us financially. But also, how many people from this church here in Bloomfield reached out to us through Facebook or through email after the war started to check on us, to make sure we were doing okay, to make sure her family was doing okay, and all the prayers. I hope you know how much that means to us, but I don't think I'll ever be able to express that fully. So I want to show you a few pictures of our life in Ukraine. So here is Dasha with her first and second grade class. We, of course, some of you may remember, I spoke here at this church before I was going to move to Ukraine, and the plan at that point was to mostly work in orphan ministry over in Ukraine. That's what I started doing there. That's something we still do. But during my time there, I kind of found this Christian school there, and I'll tell you a little bit about how I got hooked in there, but Dasha's going to tell you a little bit about the school and what it is that we do there.
So yeah, probably some of you know that this is a Christian school, and but around 40% of our kids are from non-believing families. And they have this opportunity to study in two languages, in English and in Ukrainian. So I teach first and second grade Ukrainian program, and Joe is a middle school coordinator. He teaches science, English, Bible, life skills, and all different things. And we're so glad that we have the opportunity not just to teach our kids, but to build relationships with them and to share gospel with them every day.
Mm-hmm. That gospel that never changes, and we have a different opportunity and a different way to share it with that kids. But that gospel message, what we do there, it's not just school, it's evangelism, and we're excited about that. If we can go through a few pictures here. This is my first year teaching at the school. I came just to teach Bible one day a week, and I went on a field trip with a class that now, they just finished fifth grade. I believe this would have been at the end of their second grade year, this picture here. We went on a field trip to the zoo in Kyiv. So the next picture here, this is Dasha with her first and second graders on Valentine's Day. So they were having a fun celebration there. We can go to the next picture. This is one of my favorite pictures because I feel like it kind of captures the heart of what we do at the school. We took a day to go to some friends of ours who have a house kind of off campus, and we basically, half of the kids spent some time in the kitchen learning how to cook, half of the kids spent some time outside kind of learning how to, do things with their hands, how to fix, I think there was some kind of fence there, and then they switched halfway through. But we decided to take this class picture. This is with class that just finished seventh grade, and if you can see the picture there, there's maybe two people looking at the camera. Even the teacher, Mr. Reamer's there, isn't looking where he's supposed to look, and so there are things that are different all over the world, but middle schoolers, they are the same in Ukraine that they are in America. But I just love that. And so here, when I first started coming to the school, there was a lot that I fell in love with about the school right away. You can see probably what I fell in love with most about the school right there in the middle of that picture, in kind of a dark purple top and a black skirt. And of course, we got to know each other through working together at the school. I started eventually teaching full time there. And the way I always like to say it is that I liked Dasha for a long time and she liked me after a long time. But eventually I wore her down and we can see where that led. We started dating in July of 2 years ago, 2020, I guess it was. A few months later, on Valentine's Day, I proposed. And then in June of last year, we got married in Kyiv. And you can see it's Dasha's family to the left there as you look at the picture. And then, of course, my family on the right. They got to come to Ukraine for the wedding. It was a beautiful day. And then since then, by the way, I want to point out a couple of guests, unfamiliar faces, Randy and Pam Ash. Randy Ash, when I was the youth and children's director at First Baptist Bayfield, he discipled me and he mentored me. He was the pastor there at the time. And when we were engaged, we decided to do our pre-marriage counseling with him. And he prepared us for this very unique first year of marriage that we've had. There were a few things he didn't prepare us for. Said nothing about a war coming, nothing about having all your things in a backpack ready to go, but we're so thankful that he prepared us for this year. If you could go to the next slide, please. Of course, it's not just my wonderful wife that I fell in love with about the school, but the vision of the school was something that immediately spoke to me. The school was started a few years ago when that class that just finished seventh grade this year, when they were just first graders, and the vision was this, that if godly change is going to come in Ukraine, if kingdom change is going to come in Ukraine, it's not going to come through missionaries, it's not going to come through people from the outside, and it's probably not even going to come through the adults in Ukraine, but it's going to come from the next generation of Ukrainians. If they're raised to love God and to know God, if they're raised with a heart to serve others and to make their country a more godly place, then Ukraine could start to change. And so that's what we were there to do, and of course, that work that we loved to do there was interrupted by the start of the war in February. And I know you were following the news and you were praying for what was going on there. For a couple of months, and I'll talk about this a little more later, but for a couple of months after the start of the war, we stayed in Ukraine because we felt like that's where we needed to be. A lot of the families from our school, probably about 40% of the families from our school and some of the staff, they first went to Poland and then ended up in a town of about 9,000 people in the Czech Republic. At first, they just had a little part of a church building they could meet in, and eventually, an old part of a factory that wasn't being used anymore became our school. We joined them there, I guess at the start of May, and That first picture we saw, that was Dasha back with her first and second grade class again. When the director of our school posted that picture, thank you, Mona, she said, all is right in first and second grade again. Because we knew that those kids had the best teacher in the world back with them. We can see the next picture is, this is all of our group that was in the Czech Republic. We had a thank you concert for the churches and the local people there in the Czech Republic that had helped our school. So you can kind of get a picture of how many people were there in the Czech Republic with us. So that's what was going on with our school, but of course the war affected us in different and even more personal ways than that. And Dasha's going to talk a little bit about her family during the war.
So when the war started, well, before the war started, we moved to the western part of the country, and we had my sister and my brother with us. But my parents, a lot of you know and pray for them, they were in the very east of the country where Russia first invaded. And one of the reasons why we didn't leave the country right away was we wanted to wait for them. And I just wanted to say thank you from them. They wanted us to say thank you to everyone who was praying for them, because it's a big miracle that they're alive, safe, all together. After they got to Lviv, my dad went to the car repair shop, and he wanted them to look at his car. And the guy who worked there was like, "Where are you from?" My dad says, "I'm from Mariupol." He's like, "How did you get out of there?" It's like, "In this car." And the guy didn't believe that. My parents were under constant shelling, and even on the way out of the city twice, they had to leave their car and just wait on the ground. So you are a part of this miracle, and we're so very thankful for your prayers.
Of course, one of the questions we have gotten a lot since we've been home this summer is what our plans for the future are. And of course, that's a complicated question to answer. But as we've tried to think about that question for ourselves, we've gone back to something that happened a few months ago, even before the war started. In January, kind of after we came back from our Christmas break, we were going to have just a staff work day at the school. And the director of our school asked me to lead kind of a time of devotional and Bible study with our staff. Already the few months before that had been hard for us as a school. We'd been online and offline and online and offline because of COVID, as I'm sure you've dealt with here as well. We had quite a few people on our staff just dealing with hard personal issues. And of course, kind of there in the background were all these rumors of this war that might be coming to Ukraine. So I chose to share these verses from Revelation with our staff. It's from Revelation chapter 3. This is from the letter to the church in Philadelphia. And it says, "And to the angel of the church in Philadelphia write, the words of the Holy One, the true One, who has the key of David, who opens and no one will shut, who shuts and no one opens. I know your works. Behold, I have set before you an open door, which no one is able to shut. I know that you have but little power, and yet you have kept my word and have not denied my name. Behold, I will make those of the synagogue of Satan, who say that they are Jews and are not, but lie, behold, I will make them come and bow down before your feet, and they will learn that I have loved you. Because you have kept my word about patient endurance, I will keep you from the hour of trial that is coming on the whole world, to try those who dwell on the earth. I am coming soon. Hold fast to what you have, so that no one may seize your crown. The one who conquers, I will make him a pillar in the temple of my God. Never shall he go out of it, and I will write on him the name of my God, and the name of the city of my God, the New Jerusalem, which comes down from my God out of heaven, and my own new name." Not all of that verse applied directly to what happened to our school, but at that time I was talking about it, I just, you know, very quickly wanted to remind our staff that God has put open doors in front of us. He was giving us opportunities for ministry and for his work there in Ukraine, and nothing could close those doors. When we got to the Czech Republic, she asked me again to lead kind of a time of Bible study with the staff. And I went back to these verses because those doors that God had opened for us to work with Ukrainians and to work in Ukraine, Putin can't close those doors. Russia can't close those doors. Nothing on heaven or earth can close those doors, and they are still wide open for us today. And so our plan, if the situation stays like it is, and we're still in the process of praying about this and seeking God's will, but we believe, standing here and talking today, that our plan is to return to Kyiv in the fall. We don't know if the whole school will be back there by then or not. About half of the families from our school either never left Kyiv or have come back to Kyiv by this point. We think by the end of the summer there will be even more than that. Whether or not the school comes back, we want to be there to work with those families, to continue to minister to those families, because we believe those doors are wide open. And Dasha's got a great example of how we see that God is preparing work to be done there in Ukraine.
So I already mentioned that about 40% of our families are non-believers. And this family, they're atheists, and they have two kids. One of them finished fourth grade and another seventh grade. And when the war started, this family decided to stay in Kyiv. Their mom never worked, and their dad lost his job when the war started. So we had the opportunity to send them some money a few times. Thank you for your financial support, and we were able to do that. And then we stayed in touch with this woman. And I remember when the situation with my parents was so hard, and we didn't hear anything from them for a few days, she texted me and she said, "Dasha, I'm praying for you and your family." And I believe that God can do things and can change hearts even in this hard times, and he's doing that, and we can see it.
Mm-hmm. And so this is the time of our presentation where we usually start to tell people how they can help. What I know about you is that you already know how to help because you are already doing it. And so I'm not really here to ask for your support today, but I'm here to ask for your continued support. We, of course, you know, the vision of our school was to make this kind of private education available for families who normally couldn't afford that sort of thing. But we had to pay rent on our building in Kyiv, the Ukrainian staff of our school, we had to pay their salaries, and so there was a small tuition for the school. Almost none of our families can pay that at this point. And so our goal this summer, between us and our director, who's going to be coming back to America and speaking in different churches in her part of the country, is to try to raise as much support so that the school can be free for those families and we can continue to do the work that we believe God has put us there to do. We thank you for your faithful support, and we know that even some of you have gone above and beyond and supported individually. I almost feel ashamed to ask this because of how much you've supported us, but just if God has put that on your heart, we'd be happy to talk to you a little more about that after the service, how you could join with us with kind of monthly or regular support, because even though you may have noticed that Ukraine isn't as in the news as much as it was a few months ago, the crisis there is going to go on for years and years and years, and it's going to be probably a lifelong project for us to be a part of this rebuilding effort in Ukraine, even if the war were to stop tomorrow. So we thank you, and we also, the big thing, and we're going to try to be a lot more regular about sending out our email updates, and if you don't have an email address, we can get you a paper copy of that through the mail, but kind of during the potluck time, we'll have a little sign-up sheet where you can get on our email list, and through there, you can just know how to be praying specifically for what God is doing there in Ukraine, and we'll try to keep you updated at least once a month through that. So we'd love if you would sign up for that, just to know how you can be praying for us. But say goodbye to my lovely wife. You're now stuck with me for a few minutes here. I'll miss you. So most of you have followed the situation closely in the news. I've been amazed by, when I first said I was moving to Ukraine, a lot of people, Ukraine, is that a part of Russia? Is that in Africa somewhere? Now people know very specific Ukrainian geography. When I say that my wife's family is from Mariupol, I didn't know where Mariupol was in Ukraine for the first couple of years I lived there. Now people here in America can pick out Mariupol and all these places in Ukraine on a map. And unfortunately, that's not for the types of reasons that we would have liked. But on February 24th, we were already in the western part of Ukraine, and we woke up about 4:30 or 5 in the morning because Dasha's brother called. And of course, he said it in Russian, but it was just two words. It started. And she knew, and we knew exactly what he meant. Russia had invaded Ukraine first in 2014, and they had annexed a part of Ukraine, and at times there were skirmishes that were going on there. But this was something different. This was there were missile strikes all over Ukraine, and Russia was sending troops from everywhere it could to try to take Ukraine for its own. I don't have strong enough words, but it started just an unimaginable crisis in Ukraine. There was death and destruction. The last statistic I saw, I think, said almost 8 million people have left Ukraine as refugees. During that time, we were there in Ukraine for the first two and a half months of that, and we saw a lot of things. We saw a lot of things on the news, we saw a lot of things with our own eyes, and we heard a lot of stories. And the way I describe it is that we saw humanity, we saw people at their very worst, we saw ugliness and evil in ways that I couldn't have imagined were possible before, but we also saw people at their best. And some of that was through the support of and the prayers from Americans. So much of that was through Ukrainians and through the Ukrainian church. And that's kind of what I want to talk to you about today. But it's hard to hold all that in my head sometimes still. That it's the same species, right? That it's the same people. I mean, it's people, right, who are sending these missiles and attacking, and it's people who are there laying down their lives to care for each other. The first couple of weeks, 2 to 3 weeks, were just chaos, and we were basically constantly on the phone trying to find places for people to stay, trying to get money to people who needed money, trying to arrange ways across the border for people who were able to do that. After that, and her family was stuck there in Mariupol, and we had very irregular contact with them, we wanted to help out where we could, and I can't tell you that that's because we're great people with great hearts. If I'm being honest with you, it's because any moment that we had just to sit and think about what was happening and think about what might be happening to her parents was torture. And we knew that we needed our hands and our minds to stay busy. And so we, through her cousin, found a Baptist seminary there in Ukraine. that had basically taken their building and taken their classrooms and they'd filled them with mattresses. And as people came fleeing the war, they were able to stay there and they were fed. If they came with just the clothes on their back, there were free clothes and hygiene items for them to take. And then the seminary arranged transportation across the border into Poland for families or women and children who needed that. And we started volunteering there a few days a week. We also started on Sundays when we had the time, we started attending a church that had started meeting out of this seminary about a year before the war started. And that church did something very unique. At the end of each one of their services, and this was something they did from the first Sunday that their church met, they would read together a couple of verses out of Matthew chapter 25. I want to show you kind of in context those verses, but I'll highlight the ones they would read. But I think it's so interesting how God chose these verses for that church because he knew what he had in their future. It says, when the Son of Man comes in his glory and all the angels with him, he will sit on his glorious throne. All the nations will be gathered before him, and he will separate the people one from another as a shepherd separates the sheep from the goats. He will put the sheep on his right and the goats on his left. Then the king will say to those on his right, come, you who are blessed by my Father, take your inheritance, the kingdom prepared for you since the creation of the world. And here are the verses that they would read together as a congregation. It says, for I was hungry, and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty, and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger, and you invited me in. I needed clothes, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you looked after me. I was in prison, and you came to visit me. Then the righteous will answer him, Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you something to drink? When did we see you a stranger and invite you in, or needing clothes and clothe you? When did we see you sick or in prison and go to visit you? The king will reply, truly I tell you, whatever you did for one of the least of these brothers and sisters of mine, you did for me. Then he will say to those on his left, depart from me, you who are cursed, into the eternal fire prepared for the devil and his angels. For I was hungry, and you gave me nothing to eat. I was thirsty, and you gave me nothing to drink. I was a stranger, and you did not invite me in. I needed clothes, and you did not clothe me. I was sick and in prison, and you did not look after me. They also will answer, Lord, when did we see you hungry or thirsty or a stranger or needing clothes or sick or in prison and did not help you? He will reply, truly, I tell you, whatever you did not do for one of the least of these, you did not do for me. Then they will go away into eternal punishment, but the righteous to eternal life. Can't you see the hand of God in choosing those verses for that church and for that seminary? And what a picture that is of this place where the Word of God was taught as theory, as an academic subject. It became a place where the Word of God was lived. And that was such an example for us. But as I read these three verses, three things kind of jump off the page to me. The first is that God cares deeply about how we meet the material, physical, emotional, and spiritual needs of people around us in crisis. The second thing is that our response to that crisis around us has major consequences, right? We can't see a bigger contrast between what happens to those who do these things, who respond well to the people in crisis, and what happens to those who don't. The third thing is maybe a little smaller detail, but I think it's important to talk about here, is that God isn't exactly, in this passage, he's not exactly talking to individual people. This isn't even so much about what I, Joe Reimers, do as a person. It's about what we do together. He's separating people by nations. He's separating them by large groups of people. Over the course of the war, and I'm going to talk about this a little bit, we saw examples of basically one nation full of sheep and one nation full of goats. And I'm here standing to you, talking to you in a third nation. And I just feel as I go around and I'm speaking to the American church this summer, I'm not here to tell you an answer, but I'm just supposed to ask a question. Which side of that are you going to be on? I want to talk about the goats first. One of the pretty unique things about this war, it's not the first in history like this, but it is unique, is that there's basically no language gap between the countries who are fighting. Almost every Ukrainian understands and can speak Russian. And what that means is that even before this war started, there were pastors and churches and religious teachers in Russia who had large followings of Ukrainians. Even when Dasha and I were first starting our relationship and we were kind of getting better at the other person's language, we would a lot of times watch the sermons from a pastor in Moscow, because he was from Norway, and so he would preach in English, and it would be translated for his congregation into Russian. So Dasha and I could each hear the sermon in our native language. We gained a lot, we thought, out of his teaching. A lot of these Russian pastors and youth pastors and religious leaders, they would attend conferences with Ukrainian pastors. These people were interconnected. When the war started, when Russia attacked Ukraine, these pastors and these religious leaders, they have large congregations of Russian followers. They have incredible influence over them, and they had a choice to make. Would they tell the truth about what was going on in Ukraine? Because they knew it. They were internationally networked. They weren't victims to the propaganda there in the way that a lot of people were. Would they tell the truth? Would they try to use their power to change the situation in some way? Or would they stay silent and protect their position where they were? I'm disappointed to tell you, almost without exception, they chose to stay silent. The bravest of them, they would say, "Well, we're praying for peace." They wouldn't say peace from what. They wouldn't say who attacked whom. If you follow the news out of Ukraine really closely, you may have heard about what went on in a town there called Bucha. I won't go into all the details here, but basically Russia came in and occupied that town for a period of a couple of weeks. And after the Russian troops left and Ukraine retook control of that village, awful stories of what the Russian soldiers had done there, it came out. Things that I don't even want to describe here. But as that came out in the news, there was one pastor who Dasha had followed, who this was his take on the issue. He said, "Well, we can't know exactly what happened, but I'll say this. It's wrong to kill people." Now, as we say in Ukraine, glory to the heroes. But this was a hard thing for us, because we felt like these people had power. In a lot of cases, these were people who people in Ukraine had trusted as people who God was speaking through. You can probably hear in my voice that that I'm still dealing with a lot of anger about this. And as I've prayed about it, sometimes I've prayed what I feel like I'm supposed to pray, that God would change their hearts, and sometimes I've even meant that. But if I'm being honest with you, more often I've prayed for God to bring justice. And sometimes in my mind, I have a very specific picture of what that justice would look like. It's a big lightning bolt striking their churches. And, you know, as I've thought about it more, though, these churches, we see now the decisions that their leaders have made. And whatever these people's walk with God was before the war, they made a choice when the war started. And now these churches are almost without exception being led by men who know the truth and choose not to speak it. And I think we know where those kinds of leaders lead a church. And so even if I were to pray for their destruction, seems like if they don't change something, they're walking that direction on their own. So that's one question I want to ask you. That's the warning. Are you, as a church, are you speaking the truth that needs to be spoken? I hope and I believe that you are, but these Russian pastors, they seemed like they were doing it when it was easy to do, and the moment it became hard, they made a different choice. I want to get to the more hopeful part here, though, because we were living in Ukraine, and the first few weeks, like I said, were chaos. But as things started to get organized and as a clearer picture of what was happening started to take shape, we saw that God was doing something amazing through the Ukrainian church. These churches in Ukraine were becoming the centers of their communities. Church buildings were starting to become bomb shelters. They were becoming medical centers. They were hospitals. They were delivery rooms. They were food distribution centers. They were places of worship still, too, while all that was going on. The churches themselves, the people, they were kind of one of the last organized networks of people left standing in Ukraine, and they used that ability. They took supplies to people. They got refugees out. They provided medical care where they could. They provided shelter all over the country for people. They organized prayer for people, even like Ukrainian churches who the women and the children evacuate, they would organize like these 24-hour prayer things where someone was always praying for Ukraine every hour of the day. And this wasn't just theoretical for us. This was something that touched us a lot personally. If you can move on to the next slide here. This is another picture of us with Dasha's family. She has one brother who's not in this picture, but this is the rest of her family. You can see in the back is her dad, Oleg. Kind of in front of him is her mom, Vika, her brother Bogdan, and her sister, Sveta. They were in Mariupol when the war started, and they stayed there for close to a month, when Mariupol was basically the worst place in the world that a person could be. The worst that Russia was doing was happening in that city. And they didn't stay because they had no other choice. As Dasha said, they had a car. They could have left at any moment that they chose to. Now, by the way, we had Dasha's sister Sveta with us in the west of Ukraine, and her brother Bogdan came from Kyiv to join us when the war started. But Oleg and Vika and Dasha's grandmother stayed there in Mariupol. And the reason they stayed is this, and some of you I'm sure already know this story, but before the war started, Oleg had two different jobs. One job, he worked security. But the second is he worked in a Christian mission who they ministered to all kinds of different vulnerable populations around Mariupol. But specifically, one of the things they did is they cared for elderly women, mostly widows, many of whom were bedridden and homebound and weren't able just to leave their homes. There were about 30 of them total. And by a couple of days after the start of the war, Oleg was the only person from that mission left in Mariupol. And so when we could make contact with him and when we would beg him to leave, he would say he couldn't until all those women could leave. If I had to translate literally what he said, he said, I have a sphere of responsibility here. And by the way, his wife, she didn't make that decision hard for him. She supported him every step of the way. She mostly stayed in the basement, but she would have to run outside of the basement of the church where they were sheltering to cook over a fire. Oleg went around the city day after day after day, sometimes in his car, sometimes on a bike, through the shelling, sharing the street with tanks. When we were able to make contact with him, talking on the phone, we could often hear in the background just the and we knew that's what he was living with all day. But he made his choice, right? When it was easy, or easier at least, he served. And when it got hard, he stayed. I can tell you the happy ending to that story is they were able to get all of those women out. Most of them are now in Germany being cared for there. But they stayed. Here's another picture from when Dasha was growing up. It was an event at her church. The first couple places we shared, I said this was from a Christmas party because that sure looks like a Christmas tree to me in the background. But she informed me that was actually for Thanksgiving. But it was an event at a church there in Mariupol where Oleg's brother was the pastor. I want to show you, we have a video here of what that church looks like now. This is the church, by the way, that they sheltered under when the war was going on. And Oleg was there, his brother Gena, who was the pastor of this church, stayed, and they sheltered as many people as they could. They were in the basement, but here's on the first floor. There was a floor above that, I believe, as well, in even worse shape. This was kind of a fellowship hall here where they would meet. This is where some of the guys would stay, even after the war started. Thankfully, no one died during all this from inside that church building. There was up on the second floor, there was a place where they could get some water and they would have a bucket and they would kind of bathe when they could. And they said one day there was a 17-year-old boy who was up there trying to wash his hair. So he had the shampoo in his hair and someone comes running up the stairs and says, "Tank, tank." And he runs down the stairs with the shampoo in his hair as a missile flies through the second floor window of the church. Here's their sanctuary. You see the piano there. Sorry, I still get a little emotional looking at this. If you had to describe to someone in just a few words what you saw in that video, you might say something like, it's a church that's been destroyed. But when I know what went on there, when I know what they were doing, people, when I know that right there in the moment where it counted the most, the way they were serving God, I don't see a church destroyed. I see a church perfected. I see a cathedral. You know, growing up where I grew up, not far from here in Bayfield, you read a lot about history. And you look back at these moments in history, World War II, for example, and you wonder, well, what would I have done if I were alive then? These men here, and these people, I should say, they've lived their part of history. And we know what choice they made. But I want to tell you this. Before any of this started, I could have told you exactly what choice Oleg and Vika would have made in that situation, because they were making that choice every day of their lives, right? They were choosing service, even when it wasn't glorious. They were choosing service to God and service to his people there in Mariupol. And so day after day, in little things, they were making that choice. And when the big thing came, their decision was already made. So if you were like me and you wonder, what decision would you make when your time in history comes? And I hope and pray that something like that never comes to America, never comes to Bloomfield, New Mexico. And it does seem, by the way, like God, in his wisdom, has chosen to deal with America a little differently than a lot of the rest of the world. Dasha and I have talked about it, where basically every generation in Ukraine, they have their test, right? They have their moment where the sheep and the goats are separated. Her dad and her grandmother and that generation, those generations, they grew up under the Soviet Union there, dealing with a lot of religious persecution. Her great-grandfather spent 8 or 9 years in jail because they found a Bible in his attic. And those people don't have that choice just to sit and wonder what they might do. They have to make that choice. So I would just ask you, right here, Calvary Southern Baptist in Bloomfield, is your church a crisis center? Because I don't know if that kind of crisis is going to come to America anytime soon, but I don't think you should be fooled either. Your community is in crisis. All around you, there's addiction, there's poverty, there's desperation, there's evil, there's sin, there's abuse, there's abandonment. And underneath all that, kind of the cause of all of it, and the scariest thing of all, is that there are people in this community that you share your roads with and you breathe the same air you run into in the store. They don't know Jesus the way that I hope you all know him. And that's a crisis. And, you know, one of the amazing things about what happened in Ukraine is that it was a crisis that everyone could see. And it put the Ukrainian church in a position where it wasn't against the people there in Ukraine, but it was against the evil and for the people. And I want to ask you, is your church a crisis center? Do people in your community know that when they're in their moment of crisis, that they can turn to Calvary Southern Baptist? When we were in our moment of crisis, you were there for us, and we thank you for that. I know your hearts as individuals are there to care, but I'm asking you about this church, this thing you're building together, and I just want to put that question out to you. Are you that place that people can turn to in crisis? And are there ways that you can grow more and more like that? I was just so amazed there in Ukraine, and it's part of why we're so excited to get back, is that God has put his church in Ukraine in a different place in that society and in those communities than they were before. And people are open to the gospel in a way that they weren't before. But you saw that came at a cost. And I just want to ask you, before it costs that, are you ready to be that for your community? When they're in their moment of crisis, are you going to show them that there's a God who loves them and wants a relationship with them? I thank you for being there for us in our moment of crisis. We hope to get to know you a little more during the potluck after the service, but I thank you for letting us share. I thank you for putting up with the time where my wife sat down and it was just me. But thank you for your support. Thank you for your hearts for Christ, your heart for Ukraine, and your hearts for us.
Well, that's a question for us, isn't it? Why don't we stand together? Because we're going to pray, and the music team is going to come up and lead us in a hymn of invitation. The invitation has been given. What are we going to be? What are we going to do for our community? And we talk a lot about talking about telling people about Jesus Christ, and we talk a lot about how to share that and how to share with him, but you've pointed out some very interesting things are a way to share Jesus without ever using the Bible, without ever even maybe using his name until later. When people are in crisis, they're not interested in hearing the gospel right then. They need to see it. So that's a terrific message and a terrific invitation. Let's pray. Father, thank you. First and foremost, thank you for Jesus Christ. Thank you for your presence here today. Thank you for this message of warning, this message of reminding us of who we are, your people, and what's expected of us, and what we're capable of doing through you. Seeing what you're doing in another country, seeing it through the eyes of people who live through it, and hearing their desire and determination to go back and continue the work you're doing there. Lord, thank you for them. Thank you for Joe and Dasha. Thank you for that kind of sharing of the gospel. My prayer is that you will help us as a church here at Calvary to do the same. Lord, as we sing this song, I pray that each of us will then take a moment and face you and talk with you about our part. And Lord God, if there be anyone here who has not met you, has not met your son Jesus, then make this the day that that happens. There's too many of us here ready to talk about Jesus Christ, ready to tell someone about his love for us, but tell us about what he did for us on the cross. Lord, don't let anybody leave here without you. And Father, as we sing, we ask you to send your Spirit to talk with us and to bring us to response as we need to. We ask it in the name of our Savior, Jesus.